Welcome to the Displacement Urbanism podcast series, hosted through the London School of Economics. My name is Dr. Romola Sanyal, and I am Associate Professor in Urban Geography at the Department of Geography and Environment here at the LSE. In this podcast series, we explore how cities and displacement co-constitute each other. As we see millions of displaced people moving to cities and millions of people displaced in cities around the world, the questions of how these processes intersect are crucial. In this podcast, I will be interviewing a range of actors, including those who have been displaced in different ways and those who are involved in the management and the study of displacement. We will be going around the world to explore the different issues around this topic. I hope the podcast offers an opportunity to open up conversations around the politics and processes of displacement and urbanization, the different ways it can be experienced, understood, and approached. I also hope that the podcast demonstrates how these are global and interconnected issues, but also one that draws our attention to its local specificities. Welcome to today's episode, which is titled, What is Urban About Displacement? A Global View. I am delighted to be joined by David Aubrey, who is an interregional advisor at UN Habitat and provides technical and policy advice on a broad range of urban issues, including forced displacement in cities. He also coordinates UN Habitat's global flagship initiative, SDG Cities. Previously, he headed UN Habitat's regional office for Arab states and UN Habitat's country program in Iraq. He has also worked with INGOs in Sri Lanka, Kenya, and Kosovo in reconstruction and slum upgrading, and started his career as an architect and urban designer in the UK. Thank you for joining us for our podcast today, David.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I'm really excited to have you on the podcast today because I think you can provide us with a really interesting global view of this question around displacement and urbanism. So given your work in UN Habitat, including around forced displacement, do you think that the issue of forced displacement is becoming important for the agency? Equally, do you think that the urban question is becoming important for other UN agencies that are working on displacement, like UNHCR or IOM?
Thanks for the question. Absolutely. I think what we're finding is that more and more people who are forcibly displaced are moving to cities. And whether this is something cities want or not, they really are a force that shapes the urban fabric. And I think UN Habitat recognizes this. We've always recognized that the movement of people into cities shapes up the urbanization process, and it's a movement of people into cities as a major cause for urban growth, and that has to be managed in a way that's sustainable. But we're also seeing rapid surges of people into cities as a response to displacement. And this is a relatively sort of new area for Habitat. So we need to, rapid planning, rapid kind of response around infrastructure development and even the preparedness of cities to be able to accommodate rapid growth. So this is an important area for Habitat. But also, I think the other agencies, the refugee agency, UNHCR, is acknowledging that that refugees and their people of concern are also includes internally displaced people move to cities, and the model of camps for refugees and displaced people may not still be the right model, particularly since displacement seems to be longer and more protracted. So you literally can't live in a tent for so long. Even if you are living in a tent, you'll end up replacing your tent with bricks and mortar, and if the site has been designed as a campsite, you'll end up then with a slum. So I think they're also recognizing the need to really bring urban planning into this process, but also urban governance, because municipalities, they're the face of government for both the displaced communities but also the local communities where people are moving into, and they have to somehow manage this. And so we also see, as well as planning, the need to really strengthen local authorities and their ability to manage rapid surges of population.
So it's interesting that you say that because the different agencies have different mandates. And so I was wondering, given that they have historically done different kinds of work, and now they're sort of finding these intersections between the kinds of work that they do, what do you think some of the key challenges are for them to tackle some of these questions around displacement and urbanization?
Yeah, this is a good question. I think the nice thing is that we are seeing this question through different perspectives. So UN Habitat are seeing it more around numbers of people moving to cities, and does the city provide for that growth? So are there planned areas that people can move into? Is there infrastructure? Is there waste management? Is there water? Are there enough schools? And so we see it really as more people moving to a city, and the city has to sustainably manage that. And when they don't, you end up with slums. And slums are places where, or informal areas where people don't are not able to access services. They are treated often as unequals, and their housing rights are compromised. So managing growth is our perspective on it, whether these people are rural migrants, whether they are IDPs, whether they're refugees, whether they plan to be there a long time or a short amount of time. I think then the HCR would probably see this differently. They see this as a caseload of refugees or a caseload of IDPs, and there are different international laws that govern their rights. And they might be seeing, are these people protected, and are they able to achieve their rights within international law? And I think these are two quite interesting ways, and they're mutually supportive ways that we need to look at where people are arriving and how they're accommodated and how they are able to generate livelihoods and economies at the same time how their rights are being met and whether they have protection issues that need to be addressed. So I like the different perspectives, but more and more, UN Habitat dealing with cities and UNHCR dealing with refugees and other displaced communities, as well as the International Organization for Migration, we are exchanging more and more. So that common ground is becoming better defined, and we've seconded people to HCR, and they've seconded actually quite senior people to us as well. So we're understanding each other. And defining the challenge more succinctly through that enhanced collaboration.
One of the things that I think becomes quite interesting in talking about the overlap between the two mandates, and I've heard this term used over and over again, is the humanitarian development nexus, right? But also alongside that is kind of this language around hosts and guests. The discussion about sort of humanitarian development nexus recognizes the protracted nature of crises. But at the same time, the host and guest issue recognizes that displacement is a very time-specific question. So I was wondering, what do you think are some of the issues with using some of these terminologies, particularly around that question of hosts and guests? Like, do you think that these are kinds of terms that should be used?
Now, this is a really interesting point. Just quickly on the humanitarian development nexus, I think one of the things that we've tried to do is to profile cities, to understand where people are moving to, what is the implication on even house prices, what's the implication on services and these kind of things, and what interventions need to be made where. And I think this kind of spatial profiling, and then alongside that, who's doing what where, which is something that the humanitarians often do, as well as what municipal services exist where, helps to paint a picture. And then from that, then we can sort of identify packages of support that could be delivered by different humanitarian and development agencies. Coming back to the question of hosts, I'm glad you raised that. Because I think when you talk about host communities, then the other side of that is that the people they're hosting are guests. And so when displaced people are guests, it first of all sounds like a nice, respectful term where people are welcomed, but then guests don't have the same rights as the people who live in the house, so you there are limitations in being a guest. And in Somalia, I was in Bosaso, it was maybe a few years ago, but we were talking to communities who have been guests for 25 years, and they've, even though they have an income, they have a job, or the ones that we spoke to had, they're not allowed to own land. And so this prevents them from having this kind of right to the city. And I do think that the host and by association guest is a bit problematic, because it's, when we talk about durable solutions, normally there are sort of three categories. One is that people return. Second is that they integrate, and third is that they resettle. And I think the terminology of host and guest doesn't give agency to the right to or the choice to locally integrate. And I understand that there's also the distinction maybe between refugees and IDPs, but we need to explore that framing around being able to have choices around durable solutions and not being seen as temporary people that must go home or must go somewhere else after a while.
I mean, it's a really interesting point. I mean, it's quite a politically charged position, isn't it? That, there are countries in which it's not just refugees, but it's also stateless populations that live as guests in some of these countries, and integration is a politically charged term. So how do you imagine that, what do we need to do in order to sort of shift from a host-guest relation? Like, what do you anticipate, or what do you hope would happen instead?
That is a really difficult question, because even within the UN system, UN Habitat, and when we had the Habitat 3 preparations, there was a lot of conversations around the rights to the city, meaning that everybody has the rights to the city, whether you're a migrant, whether you're a local resident that were born there. And it was, I think there was never any global consensus around that issue of the rights to the city. And I think there are many countries that are still pushing this concept. And I think it would, if there was a further acceptance of this, it would help a lot in terms of framing durable solutions. So then I guess there's the sort of continuing that debate globally or on the rights of the city. And demystifying it, and I think is important to share positive stories, because I think there's often some disinformation about newcomers and distrust, and that's natural that people don't know these newcomers and they don't know how to trust them, whether they're good news or bad news. And so we have to give sort of probably due attention to concerns that people have, but also I think we have to make sure that that we use information correctly, and that information is not politicized. So it's difficult. I mean, what I'd like to see happening would be that IDPs or displaced people, particularly the internally displaced, are treated like any other newcomer to the city. And usually people who are moving from rural areas to cities because the rural economy can't accommodate them anymore. They find their way into a city, and they are not not questioned so much about their right to remain. And I think possibly internally displaced people should be treated not differently to that, because ultimately they're people who are on the move from one part of the country to another, and they're seeking refuge and they're seeking a new start in many cases. And I think countries' legislation often don't prevent that, and I think that's the point to raise. So when when they're being treated in this kind of temporary nature, I think there is a way to go back to national legislation to say whether that's a correct response or not.
Let me just take it in a different direction, which is going back to some of the work that UN Habitat does. And again, coming back to the question that I was asking earlier about mandates and so on, and now that you know you have so many countries where Habitat also works, in which there's sort of large-scale displacement issues as well. So in your experience, what are the different ways in which the different agencies are working to address some of these questions? Like what does UN Habitat kind of do in contexts where there has been large-scale displacement that impacts their work?
Yeah, okay. So now, I guess because we've been working in this field, you know, quite significantly over the last decade, we have sort of more defined products than now. So one of them, as mentioned before, is a kind of the spatial profile, understanding movement, understanding the capacity of infrastructure, the housing market, the availability of housing, and looking at what would be the right kind of interventions needed and what kind of investments are needed to help to sustain or meet the needs of a rapidly growing population. And so we also like to really strengthen local authorities to deal with things because, you know, as mentioned before, they're the sort of the face of governments and people are looking to them for solutions. They're not necessarily looking to the UN or to the international community for solutions. The mayor is on the spot, you know, and the mayor typically doesn't have the resources even to deal with the day-to-day needs of that population, let alone an expanded population. And, you know, in many places also lacks the technical capacity to deal with the needs for infrastructure design or whatever it might be. And so one thing we've tried to do is to actually build delivery units. We call them RTOs, regional technical officers in Lebanon, that worked with groups of municipalities or unions of municipalities to provide that kind of delivery unit that serves the municipality, helps to design infrastructure that might be needed or help project manage infrastructure that might be needed, and help the local authorities do proper needs assessments so that they understand the needs themselves and can defend the interventions that are being made. So that's kind of one thing that works. And, you know, the question then is whether it can be sustained in the long term when the money runs out. And interestingly, we set up these RTOs during the sort of Israel-Lebanon conflict back in 2007. And some of them had continued in 2015 or 2014-15 when we saw Syrian populations coming into Lebanon. So it was interesting that model had ended up being self-sustaining. So these are key things. Now we're looking in places like the Sahel around being able to predict movement a bit more. So that we're working with UNEP, we're working with this kind of global, one UN global geospatial something or other that has certain predictive capacities around understanding drought threats, understanding conflict threats, tracking movement of people, tracking, predicting movement of people. And at the same time, we're starting to analyze the human settlements around infrastructure and their ability to accommodate, but their ability also to see displacement as an economic, as a positive economic addition. And then how can we prepare cities to attract populations, and what kind of infrastructures and what kind of value chains can take place to identify certain cities as growth nodes that would actually, and where an incoming population might actually benefit the city. And so we're trying to sort of turn it around a bit and helping in terms of preparedness. And even the institutional structures to be able to be better prepared for movements of people in places where movement is common, but also creating scenarios where that movement of people is actually a real benefit for that city. So that's a new area. We're at early stages, but we're exploring that particularly in the Sahel region across eight countries. Maybe we need to be doing that a bit in Somalia as well.
I think that leads me to the next question, which I've been very curious about, which is that, we see different kinds of quote unquote crises in different places, and everyone's very concerned about climate change and conflict, and also the sort of combined sort of climate change and conflict issues that we see, a lot of mixed migration as well. In your view, are there particular regions of the world that you think face these challenges more than others, and why?
That's a good question. We're living in times where things can be quite unpredictable, really. So, natural disasters, you can never really predict many of them, particularly with, but then there are areas where you just seem to be in very, very long-term protracted crises. And particularly when you have a convergence of climate-related crises such as drought, alongside conflict, and I mean the Sahel region is definitely a case there. Somalia is definitely a case there, and also places where governance structures are not very mature, not very well developed. So they, you know, and so there's more of a chance that a shock, whether that's conflict or a climate or climate natural disaster, becomes a disaster because simply the institutions are not there to deal with it. So I think where institutions are weak and where you have a mixture of conflict and drought and other kind of climate related issues, that those are the places where which really should be on our radar in order to develop new approaches to build resilience to multiple types of crises.
So then, I guess probably to build on that, and perhaps even to cap off this conversation, thinking forward, what should the different organizations be doing? When we look at urban displacement, do you think there are particular things that the different agencies should be doing? Or different organizations as well. What is the future for addressing some of these questions at a global scale?
I think really the big gap is that many people don't understand how cities work. And I think getting your head around how are cities financed, how are cities planned, how does infrastructure happen? Whose responsibility is it to collect the garbage? And is that the same entity that does the water? Probably not. And whose job is it to provide education? And then you find yourself in this kind of multi-level governance environment. And I think it's key that we kind of stop and get our heads around how cities are managed. And I've seen NGOs and humanitarian organization in good faith talking about area-based approaches, but which don't necessarily understand the roles of the local authorities and service providers working in that area. And so I think that there's some homework. We need to understand cities. And maybe Habitat needs to explain, maybe we need to understand how cities work better as well. And so I'm not pointing the finger here, but I do think we really have to understand how cities work. They're quite complex. They work at several different levels. The different responsibilities happen at different levels. So it's not the mayor that does everything. And we need to get our head around that. And we need to understand how different services are paid for. So some require grants, they don't generate service fees. So your investment there is not going to provide a return. But then there are some services that you can use some finance instruments to reinforce because they do generate user fees and things like this. So I think we just have to understand cities better because more people are moving to them and we really need to understand cities.
I really hope that we have a lot of humanitarian and other actors listening to this. because I think what you said there in the end was absolutely spot on. I think that there's just so much more understanding that is needed for cities and to understand the complexity of cities. And I get the impression from a lot of conversations that I have with some of the humanitarian actors that there's not just a lack of understanding in some cases, but also a slight fear of engaging with cities because they're so complex. It's so much more difficult to know who are the different people who are acting in there, how to navigate, complex social relations and governance structures and so forth. But that's something that's absolutely needed. Well, thank you, David, for joining us for the podcast today and for your insights. I think this is really useful to get your perspective on many of these issues, to be able to understand sort of from a broader viewpoint, many of the concerns around the questions of displacement and urbanism. And we really appreciate the time that you've taken today. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Ramona. It's been a real pleasure to join you. It's been great to chat, and I hope we get an opportunity to take this conversation further. Thanks so much.
Thank you.